D-Maze Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined as we are every Wednesday by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, now that we are a few days removed from Vanderbilt's historic loss in the Nashville Regional. And I know it's easy to pinpoint the reasons why Vanderbilt lost this time around, namely the offense drying up. But it has been four consecutive years now since Vanderbilt made it to within one win of winning the national title that they have failed to advance past the regional round. Are you noticing any sort of common thread or theme as to why the Commodores haven't been able to get out of the first weekend of the NCAA baseball tournament over the past 4 years?
Well, the first weekend, it may have been your show I was listening to, guys. And pleasure to be with you. It's rare to see what Tennessee's doing on the flip side. What, five straight to the Super Regional?
Yes.
That doesn't happen. So with that in mind, I mean, it doesn't happen in that sport. And knowing how good Vandy was and still is, I mean, they were the number one seed. The fact that they didn't do it, and we're seeing Tennessee at this rate, it tells me that Vanderbilt's more of the norm than the outlier here. And I also put it to, look, I'm not going to sit here and be critical of Tim Corbin because I didn't watch much Vanderbilt baseball during the regular season. I hear the criticisms. Willie, I listened yesterday with, you know, the thought about the pitching and different thing, using a starter in relief, all that. I'll leave that up to the experts. But I mean, it's not like I forget what the conversation was a week ago, which was, is Vandy back? I mean, that was the convo. And I just kind of smirk at that because it's like, well, I mean, Corbin is Tim Corbin, and Vanderbilt's been there. I expect them to be back. I don't view this as some major, you know, just cave. I look at it more as just this college baseball, and I think Tennessee, in their consistency, has been the outlier, not the other way around.
I believe I saw something, and I wasn't able to find it before you finished speaking, but
okay. It
was a statistic about how Tennessee's five-year streak of reaching super regionals, I think the next closest team is either two or three.
It's like three, I think. Yeah.
Right, so you're right that no team has had the sustained success that the Volunteers have had at the college baseball level over the past 5 years. I like you, Hutton, I am not an avid watcher of college baseball, but I know the good teams, and I know
if
that
it's tennis, on, I'm watching it.
Right.
But yeah, I'm right.
Tennessee versus Arkansas, you know, the two programs with probably the most top draft prospects in the country.
Probably among the top in terms of NIL resources, I would say. So you got some high end guys on both teams.
Would you guys agree that Tennessee goes into this without the pressure that it's on Arkansas to finally come through?
Absolutely, I think.
Think about that.
And I'm wondering if the winner of this super regional is the favorite to win the national championship.
I mean, coming out of the SEC like that, I mean, they're going to be.
Although the SEC has not had the level of success that we thought it would, considering all of the bids it got.
But yet we're still discussing the favorite coming out of this matchup.
True.
You see what I'm saying? Like, it's still going to be there. And the upsets are going to lead to more people picking the upper crust going into Omaha than some of the, maybe the newcomers or some programs we haven't seen in a while. I'm looking forward to this, especially with the backside of the conversation being about the backside of what we're seeing with college baseball, with all the trash talk, ejections, and everything else. I'm eager to see how things are handled here, just from the intrigue, just quite frankly. The entertainment level of it will have people tuned in as well.
Now, Hutt, continuing what's going on? Continuing with the baseball theme, I mean, going into it, I think Vandy was able to, overcome, or as Willie, you called them, they were playing, they, what was the reference, the missed, not missed,
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai, yes. Yeah. They were sort of, yeah, they were sort of the, they, yeah, you know,
Tennessee's
UT went
Cobra
at it at like the Cobra Kai, and Vandy was sort of the Mr. Miyagi. In a sense.
A little more. Yeah. I don't know specifically that, but they definitely play differently.
Exactly. They play differently from – but when you saw at the end of the season the way Vandy was playing, how they just basically – it seemed like they were a different team once the SEC tournament rolled in. And then that parlayed them into having the number one seed because everyone believes that the SEC – and quite frankly, you should believe that the SEC is the best conference when it comes to baseball. But do you think in a long run that may have, I'm not going to say hurt their chances of advancing, meaning Vandy, but sort of made it a little bit more difficult in a sense now that you look back on it?
Man, I don't think it's that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Corbin's always taken the approach that he took into the SEC tournament. You know, and if there's a guy that would have his team ready to go going into the regional, it would be him. And the reason I don't think it's that is just how dull the bats were from top to bottom. You know, it's not like it was just the middle of the lineup that just couldn't hit at some crucial moments. I mean, this was from the jump. So I think that's what's just so abrupt about it and jarring is, man, what stunned this team? You know, it's like the stun gun.
Mm-hmm.
Going into a regional that you're hosting, you know, I thought the crowd for Tennessee, I thought played a factor. And their final win got them going finally. I'm not so sure that, you know, the murmur or whatever you want to call it, the stunned crowd did maybe the opposite for Vandy. You know, I think the home crowd could play a huge factor in the regionals.
Now,
there was nothing to get behind with that. It was just very bland. And that's what's so surprising about it is they could not find that one player, that one hit, that big moment that you thought they were going to finally get some things going. Instead, it was just kind of lifeless.
Well, it's almost like they were, in a sense, because they had did it, meaning Vandy, they had did it a game or two prior with the, coming back and winning a game, and you just felt that, man, the bats are not rolling, and all of a sudden in the ninth inning, they come alive, but not enough to win that baseball game. I just thought that Vandy didn't have, ultimately, at the end, they didn't have enough bats. This tournament, to advance, and it showed because they went against the pitcher that frankly wasn't that good.
Coming into it,
and they couldn't get a hit off him all but one.
I'm thinking that too. You know, you got a guy with an eight.
He was giving up almost nine runs. Yes.
Yeah, man. I'm thinking, man, this can get the bats rolling here, and they couldn't do it. You know, I think the conversation about is Vandy back is relevant now.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of smirking at it last week, but I mean, it's a good conversation to have. I think, you know, what we saw this year shows that Corbin's going to get into the transfer portal some. But, man, the competition mm-hmm. across the board right now in the conference is crazy. You know, Kentucky, you know, I know Kentucky lost, but they were up big or something in the final game that they played. Or they were right in it, in the thick of it. I mean, they could have won that regional. And then some other upsets too, like Texas. But, I mean, I'm looking at that going, this is the gauntlet. And we're still going to talk about Tennessee-Arkansas, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Now, we had a conversation earlier this week. I think it may have been Monday. Shoot, it's only Wednesday. It seemed like it's Thursday or Friday.
I know, it feels like
Yeah, it feels later, yeah. But we had a conversation about X factors. Outside of the quarterback and Jeffrey Simmons, let's just say that. Who would be your X factor? And outside of, let's say, Calvin Ridley, because I know what I'm going to get with Calvin Ridley. But outside of those three guys, who would be your X factor for the Tennessee Titans?
I mean, just pick a receiver.
So you're going down the route that I went down.
I'm going receiver, because I think the number two receiver is crucial for what we're going to see. Now, I could go offensive line. I could go, you know, left tackle. But I look at the line as a unit more than one player. So if we're just going X factor one player, shoot, give me the second receiver, because this is a team that's going to have to score some points to be able to keep up. I don't see a defense that's vastly improved. I don't see a pass rush that's getting after any of these quarterbacks. Therefore, I you know, I'm looking at a team that needs to put up 24 to 27 points. Mm-hmm. They couldn't score 21 last year.
That was Derek's answer, by the way, yeah. the number two receiver. My answer, and we'll get Willie's answer because Willie was out yesterday. My answer was Lloyd Cushenberry in the X Factor non-quarterback slash coach division. Willie, we didn't get your answer yesterday, so who would be your answer for that?
I think Cushenberry is a great answer. I think that a monster year from Jeffrey Simmons would do so many things. He hasn't had a monster year in at least 2 years. Maybe more.
Contract year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely since he signed the contract. So
yeah.
I think the overall – forget about the whole leadership thing and everything that we've been talking about, but just him being out there every week, having some big games where you're like, man, they can't stop Jeffrey Simmons. He's disrupting everything and making everybody around him better. That would have a domino effect. So I would say him.
Okay. Mace, did you say I could not say Simmons?
Well, I wanted to take Simmons out, but Willie really took him. I understand the answer, but like Jeff, I know what I'm going to get out of him. Yes, he needs to play, and I think I said that yesterday.
So usually, Hutton, when I said this yesterday, when I think about X factors personally, I tend to think of secondary slash role players who can step up or players who are quote-unquote unsung heroes. Versus a top player performance.
So when we look at Calvin Ridley and Jeffrey Simmons, it's like, okay.
That's just my opinion.
Exactly. I think the other guy that comes to mind for me then, I will play off of your Cushenberry, would be Moore just because.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Dan Moore, right?
Yes.
Dan Moore is just because what they did to move Latham from one side to the other, that's a big decision. That's not a small decision. That's a big decision. And to put him in there. He's got to prove that he is not the bumbling Dillard or Petit Frere, all of the guys that have been
cycled through
the targeted as the weekly, they can't get this guy anymore. He's got to be better than that. He doesn't have to be John Hanna or Anthony Munoz, right? The greatest. He just has to be good. So I would say that's a big X factor for me. Man, that's a better qualifier to your question.
Yes.
It's a great question. I mean, I look at it like Simmons. Yeah, I agree. We kind of know what we're going to get, but we need more.
Yes.
You know, we know what we're going to get from Tajay Spears. We need more. We need to see more. Same goes for Tony Pollard, if they're going to be the dynamic duo out of the backfield. I mean, again, aside from the quarterback or the best player on the team, which would be Jeffrey Simmons, Ridley comes to mind, but aside from him, I mean, I just pick a receiver and tell me he's the number two receiver and he's legit number two and you can count on him.
All right.
That's crucial.
Okay, Hutt, I've got one for you because it's that time of the season. We played a glowing clip earlier in the show. Calvin Ridley, man, I really like Cam Ward. He's doing a lot of good things. And this season, you pick an NFL city, you're going to see quotes like that, right? Everybody, hope is high. There's nothing that you can really
– it's a winning season.
You never see anybody say, man, our guy just is not getting it done in these OTAs. We've got to move in a different direction. Now, you just don't – you're not going to see that. Can you think of a moment where you maybe bought in to a Titan OTA person in the past and you're like, guys, I'm telling you, I'm believing it. This guy's going to really make a difference in the fall. And you were like – later, you were like, what was I thinking? Why did I buy into that?
I've got a good one recently.
Recently?
Does training camp count, or does it have to be OTA?
No, I think training camp's fine, but I think of off-season as a whole, but especially the early
I've got camp. One that I bought hook, line, and sinker. Chigakonkwo. Chigakonkwo.
You bought into the Chigakonkwo.
Right. I thought that in a limited role in his rookie season – he was incredibly efficient, and I thought, with a bigger role, he's going to be big. I drafted him at the end of my fantasy football draft to stash him on the bench just in case, because all of the people I play with live, you know, I do it with people that my dad worked with back in Virginia, so they don't know who Chigakonkwo is. He's an easy pick at the bottom of the draft, and I never use Chigakonkwo in fantasy football. So I think I bought hook, line, and sinker into the Chigakonkwo hype in 2023.
I mean, let's just go to any of the running backs from like 2004.
How about Bishop Sankey?
Bishop Sankey, Chris Henry.
Oh wow,
Chris Henry, man.
David Flewellen.
Y'all going back.
Was he ever hyped up like he's going to be a sleeper guy that's going to play a lot? I'm just trying to think of guys who
Right. But those running backs were that's Bishop Sankey's a good one.
Bishop Sankey is a good one that they were very high on, and he did next to nothing. Remember Mike Williams, who had the big years at USC? I feel like there was a offseason where we're like, man, Mike Williams, that is the guy. He has got the tools, you know, all of that. And then
and that was right after like the Joel Filani draft.
You're going
and Paul Williams.
Paul Williams is another wide receiver Paul that Williams for years, like, this guy's developing. He's going to make nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Maybe that's an exercise we do.
But guys can look. Guys can really look good in these practices and these workouts to where it really does. I mean, it's everybody's looking for those guys, so you're going to have extra optimism, but it's a cautionary tale.
It's hard to look bad.
Right.
Isn't it? Mace.
Yes.
Isn't it hard? I mean, it's hard to look bad this time of year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, if you look bad this time of year, then I feel for you. Yeah.
It's usually because you can't get out there.
Yeah.
Right? That ends up being the story. So-and-so has got the asthma. You know, that was the
that's right. That's
he's
right.
not hurt or he's not showing up. Why is he not showing up?
That was Treylon Burks with the asthma.
Those are the stories. It's not a guy that's out there every day. The guys that are out there every day usually are going to make some plays. You're like, oh, he's looking good.
Well, last year, wouldn't it be T'Vondre Sweat? Just based on his sheer size.
Well, that was the story, and he wasn't out there, right? And people were really worried that he was going to be able to be in shape to play. And that turned out okay. I can give one from years ago that I was like, here's the next guy that everybody's excited about. Jeff Fisher's hyping him up. I'll believe it when I see it. And the guy turned out to be pretty good until he got hurt. It was Mark Mariani, right? He was like a seventh-round pick. He made some noise in those workouts, and he at least became a really good returner. Until he had that really bad injury.
He figured it out.
He did.
He knew his role.
All right, let me give you one more, and I'll bring it back to a current event here, Hutt, before we let you go.
Yep.
We had a discussion the other day about Kyle Pitts, right? It's not really working for the Falcons. This guy has got incredible, off-the-chart physical tools. And the Falcons might be like, do we want to sign him to the next contract? What do we want to do with this guy? I thought of another guy that was hyped up a lot for the Titans, and was okay for the Titans, flashed, but was a much better player after he left the Titans. Jared Cook, remember him?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He was much better when he
played forever, right? Never found his groove with the Titans, but the second place he went, the third, he ended up being a really solid role player, not what you would hope you would get with Pitts.
He didn't want to block.
Right. But so,
you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
But tell me what you think of Pitts. Like, do you think Pitts in a second, a fresh start would be worth diving in on and giving up some assets to get?
Yes. Yes. Yep. I mean, but I say that. I don't know how Arthur Smith did not get more out of him. I'm especially coming off of the 2020 year where he had Jonnu Smith, the tight ends caught like 700 yards or something like that. I mean, they were utilized perfectly. Within an offense that had a 4,000-yard passer and a 2,000-yard rusher. And he goes to Atlanta and doesn't get that out of Kyle Pitts. That's an eyebrow raise for me. Of all coaches, the former Titans coach can't do it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the athleticism and what I've seen from Florida and everything. I would love to see him in an offense that is pass-heavy, not run-heavy. But right now, I mean, I think that's kind of the method to the madness right now, is that they have to run the football well. And I think Pitts would be a great friend to Cam Ward. I don't hate the idea at all, Willie.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Yes, Hutton.
Let me quickly – can you guys see my background or is my camera off? No, it's on.
There we go.
I don't know if you can see. I was cleaning out my closet, and I found this old article in the Tennessean.
Oh, wow.
Do you see this? And it's got D-Mace. This is like the 15-year anniversary of the Tennessee Titans. And it's got D-Mace on here. And I wanted to read this because I don't know why they
go ahead and read it. Please read it.
Okay. Right? It's got Yancey Thigpen on here, okay?
I assume this was written by Jim Wyatt?
This was 2013. 2016. Uh-huh. So it could have been, or actually there were a bunch of voters and things in here. So like, it could have been written by Willie. it says Yancey Thigpen, nearing the end of his career, he played in 10 games and made 38 receptions, blah, blah, blah. Derek Mason, it says Derek Mason later became a great wideout. What in the hell?
Later.
That's all they said.
It's got you as kick returner.
Uh-huh.
But this is the 15 year team. Later became a great wideout. Are you kidding me?
I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey,
no respect.
I mean, if we're listing top wide receivers for this franchise,
it's me and everybody else. Titans.
AJ, and literally everybody else is Joe Filani and Paul Williams.
Exactly.
I don't think you can undersell in the context of at that time when they had Yancey Thigpen and Dice. Carl Pickens at one point.
Dice, right? Yeah.
And back then I would do Frank. A lot of mm-hmm. A lot of spotting for the network broadcasts. You know, so if Don Kricke or Dick Enberg or Kevin Harlan was coming through there, I was just the background spotter, right? You're not on the air or anything. You're never on camera. You're just behind the scenes, but you're listening in on a broadcast. You can hear the production, and my job is to point out subs that go into the game, who made the tackle, who made a good block. You know, a spotter can really, as you know, Hutton, can make a big difference in a broadcast.
Oh, it's huge.
But you never know you never know the guy. So I hope I did a good job for those guys. But when they had Carl Pickens and Yancey Thigpen on the Titans, there was so much hype. If they can just get Yancey Thigpen going and Carl Pickens, oh my goodness, can you believe how good? And I'm watching the team every week. Like, these guys come in every 4 or 5 weeks, and I'm like, guys, who am I? I can't tell Dan Dierdorf or Sam Weish or whoever is doing the color, hey guys, let me tell you what's going on. Like, who are you, you little punk? You know? What's your name? Have I ever heard of you? Why would I listen to
Willie
you?
Who?
I remember telling Dan Dierdorf one time, I was like, hey, look, I'm just going to throw this out there. Pickens and Thigpen, they're not high on these guys. Everybody's all over them. They're not doing anything. You know, I don't know if I said it was like, but watch Mason, watch Dyson. These are the guys that Steve McNair is going. And Dan Dierdorf like looked at me like I was some young idiot. Like, why would I listen to you? He's like, well, they've signed Carl Pickens for a 3-year deal. I was like, all right, man. So let's see how it goes.
And it didn't go well.
But I think, that was such a league-wide story of name guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you already had Steve. You already had
but
Eddie.
But it never happened. Those guys never did anything.
Yeah. Never. They never came together. It's like Britt Musburger came into the booth whenever he was doing the Raiders play-by-play, and he was, for whatever reason, he was huge on Tajay Sharpe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Wow, goodness.
And I was telling him, I'm like, wow. I was like, Tajay Sharpe is not going to get the ball more than maybe 4 times.
Wow, what was he reading? He
had the opportunity to catch the ball 4 times today. So I don't know if someone pranked him or, like, he thought it was Tajay Sharpe that was going to be the top guy.
Of all people?
Yeah. Hey, Mace, by the way, Wyatt, Jimmy and Mike Keith both gave you a great endorsement here. And you were number 8 overall, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you.
In the top players of in the first 15 years. Oh,
okay. Not high enough.
Yeah, still not high enough, I don't think.
The write-up right here later became – I took that to mean as a slight to the Baltimore Raven wide receiver.
Uh-huh. Well, I take it. As long as I'm on somebody's 15-year – or was on someone's 15-year sort
of. In 2013, it says now he's a radio host for 102.5 FM and a wide receivers coach at Innsworth High School.
Yeah, I was. See?
So, there you go, Mace. Hey. I wanted to show you this. I came across this.
Thank you.
I used to save these papers, and I missed the hardcover, like hard copy paper because of that. And I missed David Clymer.
Yes.
Yes. Hutton, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
615-737-1025. Willie wasn't here yesterday, so we need to introduce him to the hottest R&B group there ever was, not Big Jeff and Enormous Sweat. We'll discuss that, well, specifically one half of that duo. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
Margaret, I saw Sebastian was doing some things like yoga, it seemed, or hot yoga of some kind this offseason. Did you do anything kind of out of the ordinary or... maybe outside the box?
I try hot yoga. Whew. I tried hot yoga.
How did it go?
It was all right. Wow. Tried Pilates too. I ain't going back to Pilates.
That was Devondre Sweat yesterday. Going back to Pilates.
Hey, Pilates is totally different from hot yoga, boy. Pilates, woof. Even for I hate Pilates myself. It's just your body works different, man.
Speaking of enormous sweat, Devondre Sweat in hot yoga.
Woo-hoo.
That is an enormous amount of sweat.
Man. Gosh. I wonder what people thought when he walked in. Damn.
That's a big guy.
You could enormous sweat.
If you took Devondre Sweat's shirt after hot yoga and you know, wring it out, whatever you want to call it, you could end a drought somewhere. With
all that sweat, man, big fella like that. Good Lord. Man, I'd have just looked like whoo. Big fella. Whoo.
Yes.
Hot yoga.
Hot yoga and Devondre Sweat.
I don't know. Does that even sound like it's supposed to go together?
No.
It does not.
Willie, have you ever done hot yoga?
But the big fella went in there.
I've done yoga. I've never done hot yoga.
I will never. I try not to do regular yoga. I always just do hot yoga.
Okay, so give me the premise why the hot yoga is the extra ingredient that is separating it.
I think it's because, at least to me, I'm not sitting here and saying I'm some yogi. That's what they call them, aren't they? Yogis?
Yeah, yes. I think you can.
I'm not, you know, a yogi. So
not to be confused with the bear.
Exactly. Right? So I don't know.
Or the catcher. Yeah.
Yeah, yogi. Yeah, you're right. Yogi bear. But I think it's because, at least for me, it allows my body to warm up quicker, and it allows me to stay in poses a lot longer, allows my muscles to stretch a lot better. So some of these poses you can get into a lot quicker. Because as you get older, man, if you're not doing it, if you want to start doing it, which I would advise anybody, any and everybody, do yoga. If you are an able-bodied person, do yoga. Do hot yoga. Because I think in the long run, it helps you out, your body anyway. So that's why I think that's sort of one of the premises behind it. I could be wrong. So that's why I tend to do hot yoga.
So, Willie, as I said earlier, Derek unintentionally nicknamed the Titans defensive line yesterday as the new R&B duo of Big Jeff and Enormous Sweat.
Your mom's favorite R&B group.
Yes. Enormous Sweat is Keith Younger.
Yeah, it's only two people.
Right.
It's only two people.
So the Keith Sweat, I think we got to get Keith Sweat in there somewhere.
Yes.
He's got to be connected in there somehow.
Keith Sweat is his older brother. There we go. A little Keith Sweat as we talk about Devondre. Second-year expectations for Devondre Sweat. Last season, played roughly two-thirds of the defensive snaps, had 23 quarterback pressures, just one sack, but as the two of you have noted, interior defensive lineman, not necessarily known for sacks. And I was curious about this, actually. So Pro Football Focus has put out a list of the top players, the top 32 players at every position. And on its list of the top interior defensive linemen, by the way, Devondre Sweat, number 26 out of 32 on that list. I looked at the top five on PFF's list and looked at how many sacks they had last season, just for context. Chris Jones had 5. Dexter Lawrence had 9. Cam Hayward had 8. Quinnen Williams had 6. And Jalen Carter had 4.5. So Devondre Sweat had 1. PFF said Sweat had an impactful rookie campaign and is poised to continue that good play in his second season. The 365-pounder earned a 75 PFF run defense grade, ranking 10th among interior defenders. His lowest categorical grade was 64.1 in pass rush. So what are baseline reasonable expectations, you think, for year two of Enormous Sweat?
I don't know how quick you could pull these numbers up, but if we consider, and I think we do, Chris Jones to be the preeminent interior lineman in the league, right? Mm-hmm. As far as accolades and winning team, all of that stuff, getting paid big and being worth the big investment. My theory sometimes, especially with interior guys, is depending on the scheme, but it's much more important, like, does the team get the sacks? The guy on the inside may be doing the same thing every year, but some years you get more sacks than others. There's a little bit of, I don't want to say luck, but circumstance that goes into who gets the sack, as long as the team gets a certain amount of sacks. So what would Chris Jones's sacks be year by year? Because he would certainly be the top of the top.
I could take a look at that.
Because I think there's probably some interior guys that on a given year might have 8, 9, 10 sacks from the interior, and other times it might only be 3 or 4. But the guy is still a force. It just happens to be that maybe the outside edge rushers
so
get the sacks.
Chris Jones, man, these are some big numbers. He had 5 sacks last season, 10.5 the year before, 15.5 the year before that.
Right. But his team got to the Super Bowl last year, and he only had 5 sacks.
Correct.
But he was still, did he miss a lot of games or something?
He played 15 games.
15 games. So if you just look at the sacks, you would say, well, that's a down year for Chris Jones. But I'm sure if you look at the grades and everything like that, he graded out fine. Like when somebody's scheming against the Chiefs, they're starting by saying, okay, let's start our offensive game plan. How are we going to block Chris Jones? That's where it always starts with them. Just like when Albert Haynesworth in his couple-year window as maybe the most dominant defensive player in the league, it's not like he had 15 or 20 sacks. He got some sacks, but he was the focal point and forcing the other team to double-team him. What are we going to do? We can't contain this guy. And that was opening up a Kyle VandenBosch. It was opening up blitzers. And so the defense as a whole was very effective. And it started with Haynesworth, but Haynesworth didn't necessarily get the big sack numbers.
Well, this is what I would love to know. I would love to know if there is a...
He was 89 overall, his grade last season.
So that's a high-end grade. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
I would love to know if there is a statistic for double teams faced. I don't know. I'm sure somebody
I'm
has
sure
done
that.
Is.
Got that.
But
sure
I would love that. To see that number, because Jeffrey Simmons likes to mention that I don't have a lot of sacks because I get double teamed.
I think that's 100% true.
Right.
Right.
And I opened up space for other guys by being double teamed. But the Titans, as a team, had 32 sacks last season, which was tied for 29th in the NFL, and 9 of them just walked out the door with Harold Landry. So where are the sacks going to come from? And what is a reasonable total of sacks? Because, look, at the end of the day, defensive linemen, a lot of them are judged by sacks. It may not be fair, but that's just the truth. So if Tavondre Sweat can get from 1 sack to 4 sacks, so add 3. I mean,
I'm going to stay consistent because I don't want to be on the record here or something and have Jared come back. You told me he was going to have 8 sacks. Mm-hmm. You told me.
Yes, you do have to be careful about that.
I will stand by what I've said along about Sweat in particular. Now, Simmons is a little bit different because he, I think, started off on a higher plane. We're still trying to learn about what the ceiling is for Sweat. But specifically with sacks, I don't think he ever has to be a big sack guy to be a really good player. We mentioned Vince Wilfork and Haloti Ngata. Mm-hmm. And some great guys who were all pros year after year, that when you look at their year-by-year sack total, and remember how much we slammed Jared on this on a show over at Bridgestone Arena one time, where we looked at the career sacks for Ngata and Vince Wilfork, and we said that is an example of a great, effective football player that doesn't get sacks.
So here's something interesting.
Sweat might be that guy.
Here's something interesting. So, of course, Pro Football Focus does have a double team rate stat.
Of course they do.
And this came out through five weeks of the 2024 NFL season with a minimum of 50 run defense snaps. Tavondre Sweat, I just lost him. Tavondre Sweat, it was roughly like 40%. It was 42.2% of his snaps through week 5 of the NFL season. 35 of 83, he was double teamed. 42.2%.
And where does Simmons rank?
That was through week 5?
That was through week 5 of the NFL season. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm going to butcher this person's name. Folo Runsu Fadukasi of Houston had a double team rate of 71.9% through 5 weeks of the season.
I would not have guessed.
What about Chris Jones? Is he on there?
Chris Jones, 34.3%.
I would have thought that number
Jeffrey Simmons, 33.3% through the first 5 weeks of the season.
So Sweat got double teamed more than Jeffrey?
Through the first third of the season.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
I would have never thought that.
I don't have access to PFF. You do. Maybe we can look this up during the break. Maybe we can find the season total for double team rate. So maybe Jeffrey Simmons does have a point. 615-737-1025. Your second year expectations for Enormous Sweat. He's not Meatloaf anymore. I know I liked Meatloaf. He's now Enormous Sweat. Keith Sweat's younger, huskier brother who opens for him on tour.
Little big brother.
Yes. He's littler, younger, but much, much bigger. 615-737. Don't get it twisted. 615-737. Well, see what I did there? 1025. 1025. You didn't think that I, of all people, would know a lot about Keith Sweat. Yeah. The PFL World Championship semifinals are Thursday, June 12th at Municipal Auditorium, and you can be there. Text in the keyword match, M-A-T-C-H, 2615-737-1025 now to be entered to win a pair of VIP ringside tickets. Visit pflmma.com/schedule for more details. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 1025, 1063 the game.
Some good Keith Sweat right here.
I prefer the Sexual Healing remix, personally. But this is
Enormous
Sweat's
in the background.
Song. Yes.
He's singing background.
So unfortunately, as we scoured PFF during the break, we weren't able to find the database with the double team rate for the season. But from what we saw through the first 5 weeks of the season, Tavondre Sweat double teamed more in terms of percentage of snaps than Jeffrey Simmons. One texter says, my problem with the Titans and Jeffrey Simmons is they talk about him like he is Chris Jones. It seems like his best years come when they are good and he can fly under the radar, but the Titans need him to take over games for a poor defense, and I don't think he's done that.
See, there's a difference between, I don't think anyone's, you know, at least I'm not talking about Jeffrey Simmons as if he's Chris Jones, because there's a difference between Chris Jones and every other defensive lineman in the National Football League. It's evident when you watch the game, he stands out. He just stands out. As soon as they come on the field and they line up, he stands out. Everybody seems to have an arrow on him because of what he can do. He is almost Reggie White-esque in a sense that you got to know where he is at across the line. You got to know where he's at, because if you don't, he's going to disrupt you. Even when you know where he's at, he's still going to be a disruptive force. So I'm not no way, no how trying to compare Jeffrey Simmons to Chris Jones. But what I will say is Jeffrey does have the ability to be more consistent than what he has been the last two seasons. And I know, you know, not last season, before that, he was dealing with some injuries. I know that. The ankle injury, I believe. I think it was two seasons ago. And he just hadn't gotten back up to the form that we saw that parlayed him into a big contract.
So I mentioned the list from Pro Football Focus of the top interior defenders. Tavondre Sweat was number 26 on the list. Venture to guess where Jeffrey Simmons is on the list of the top 32 interior defensive linemen ahead of this season.
32?
Top 32.
He is not 32. He is above Tavondre Sweat.
No. Tavondre is what?
26.
But
he's only a single, according to our colleague, Jared Stillman.
Yeah.
Not a double.
I think
we could argue he's even more than a double. But
I was going to say ground rule double, but I think that's too soon.
He's
or
a top
double team. Where you're thinking of going, stretching it to a triple. Maybe you could get a triple, but you say, no, I'm just going to take a double.
I think he's a top 10.
He is top 10.
Okay.
He is number 9 on the list. Here are the interior defensive lineman in front of him, according to Pro Football Focus: Chris Jones, Dexter Lawrence, Cam Hayward, Quinnen Williams, Jalen Carter, Leonard Williams, Derek Brown, DeForest Buckner. That's the 8 ahead of Jeffrey Simmons on this list. And Christian Wilkins rounds out the top 10.
Yeah, and listen, you know, we look at Jeffrey Simmons different because we see, you know, we see it every day. And, you know, we expect more, and the way Jeffrey sort of presents it, you know, if you listen to him, but look at his play, they don't match. And I'm not saying that he's a bad player. Again, you want more out of that position from him because you've seen more. When you've seen more, then you shouldn't give me less. So I think that's what Jeffrey Simmons is running into. He's talking a little bit more, but we're seeing a little bit less productivity at that position because, again, we know what he's capable of doing, and we just need to do it. We need him to do it like Chris Jones do it each and every game. He doesn't need to be – I wish he was Chris Jones, but he needs to be consistent like Chris Jones each and every game, and he just hadn't been that way. At least this season he wasn't.
I'm reminded of Leonard Williams going out to the joint practices last year with the Seahawks and seeing Leonard Williams, and I'm saying, oh, my God.
Sometimes yeah, he's huge.
6'5", 302 pounds. He stopped me in my tracks when I saw Leonard Williams. And I'll be curious where Jeffrey Simmons ranks usually around the end of training camp.
Uh-huh.
They, you know, ESPN, I think it's Jeremy Fowler, does the rankings. He does the polls with the executives and players and ranks the top players at every position.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering where Jeffrey Simmons is usually high on that list. I'm looking for last year's rankings. I'm wondering where he will fall this year, just because the perception of Jeffrey Simmons for those of us inside Nashville who watch him on a weekly basis versus the perception of Jeffrey Simmons by the league at large are quite different.
Yes. I think the league at large think highly of him, more highly of him. I think us here, at least let me speak for myself. I think highly of him, but I want to see more from him. Again, I think highly of him, but I want to see more from him.
All right. So I did find this list from Jeremy Fowler. This was July 9th of 2024. Executives, coaches, and scouts ranked the NFL's top 10 defensive tackles for 2024. Jeffrey Simmons was fourth on the list around this time last year behind Chris Jones, Quinnen Williams, and Dexter Lawrence. And I actually like this description of Jeffrey Simmons in this piece by Jeremy Fowler. Quote, Simmons is the classic eye test player. His stats aren't always gaudy, but coaches and scouts know he wrecks game plans. When he's focused and sets out to make a lot of plays, he's pretty much unblockable. A head scout with an NFL team said, I think he'll have a big year, similar to Justin Madubuike in that same Baltimore scheme last year. That obviously did not happen. Added a personnel evaluator. His power is probably the best in the league. I don't think he's played his best recently, though. I think that's
pretty sums up right there. He hadn't played his best recently. And I was high on Jeffrey coming into last season. And I said this over and over. I was high on him because I saw what he did previously. And I'm thinking you're bringing in Denard Wilson, who has this attack-style defense. Those rushers are going to get up the middle. Adding Sweat, that's going to take up a couple of bodies. You ain't going to be able to always double-team him. So he should dominate single block when he's single unblocked. He should dominate. And it just didn't work out that way. My expectations was this because of a new defense and what he's shown, but then what we actually get was a lot less. Now, what I will say is this. I can't wait to see him in year two in this defense. Because to me, this is where we're going to see like that Jeff that we have been wanting to see. I think this is the year. And if he can't do it this year, I don't think he's ever going to be able to do it. Why? Because this, you know this defense, in and out. They know what they know what they can get out of you. You know what you can give. This should be. And then Tavondre Sweat is another year older in this league and knows this defense too. Now people have saw tape of Tavondre Sweat. Now they know he can be a big problem into this, and he's going to get better. So that should open up some things for you, Jeffrey. And this should be the year you knowing this defense a lot better, having someone truly on the side of you now that can command a double team. This should be the season where you really start to set the tempo for or the tone for yourself moving forward. This can be a 2-3 year run for you that we have been wanting to see, and it starts this year. If he can't do it this year, if you keep getting this inconsistent play, don't plan on him being on his team the next following year. I'm just telling you that. Don't be surprised if he's not.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Big Jeff and Enormous Sweat on our phone and text lines driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Coming up next, tonight, finally, The Stanley Cup Final begins. The Florida Panthers versus the Edmonton Oilers. And there is a narrative that's out there, specifically about the Panthers, that relates to us here in Nashville, that I'm kind of sick and tired of hearing about, I should say. And we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.